We can validate your opinion if you took the time to write into the show. 'Cause it's a great debate. Maybe we'll learn something new, 'cause the input comes directly from you for this show. 'Cause it's a great debate. If you don't think our picks are great, a Twitter poll decides its fate. Don't hate us. It's a great debate.
Yeah, I think I could really go pro with this.
Hello and welcome to A Storm of Spoilers off-season tour. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and the media that I'm sad I missed out on this 2017 is like 80% of Netflix and Hulu shows. I feel like I did a lot to try to catch what I could, but still missed the majority.
Hi, I'm Joanna Robinson. And if you told me last year that I would not have watched the new David Simon HBO show, I would have laughed at you. But life got in the way, and I never watched The Deuce. So that is my big pop culture regret of 2017.
And I'm Neil Miller. And I think what I would like to say is that I'm sorry to have missed The Handmaid's Tale. But given how sort of sad that sounds, that show sounded, I might not feel so bad. What I do feel really bad about is the fact that I did not see The Disaster Artist at South by Southwest and recently saw it, and it was awesome. And I wish I would have been more on that bandwagon earlier. So that's that. But I rectified that recently, so everything's fine now. It's great.
We are, of course, talking about 2017 media because that is the topic of this month's great debate, the defining movie and TV show of 2017. That's going to cover a lot of ground. Although, surprisingly, we had some clusters from your emailed suggestions around certain media that we'll, of course, address. Then we'll have our own picks, and everything gets thrown together in a Twitter poll. And then you decide the ultimate winner, and we get to gloat like myself and Hugh Jackman, the two winners of our previous great debates. It doesn't matter what the topic was for the first one. It's just that I won overwhelmingly. Yes. And with
yes,
that,
Dave, you are the scariest horror villain of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but
Dave Gonzalez.
It should be noted that you won the first one and then didn't make it into the final vote in the second one.
That's why I chose to identify Australia's national treasure, Hugh Jackman, as the real winner of
instead
the second.
Instead of your beloved co-host, Joanna Robinson.
This is all just going downhill. Let's just pivot to Joanna, who I'm sure has reviews.
I do, for once. I'm ready. On the ball. Here we go. I'm going to read one American review and then one that we got from like far afield, which is just like a fun way to close out the year. This is our last episode of the year, right? Yes?
Yes.
As far as I know. So I will just take this opportunity.
Shout out to our fans around the world.
Yeah, to say, like, thank you so much for all the reviews you've left this entire year. But also, like, it's just been so fun to hear from people all around the world and find out the different corners of the world where this podcast goes. It's kind of extraordinary to learn that. So thank you guys all for writing in and identifying from whence you came. So the first thing that I am going to do is, this is an American one. It's from Lady Lackless. 5 stars, came for the throne, stayed for the off-season tour. And that's good news because the off-season tour is going to be long. All right. I have listened to this podcast for years as a smug book reader. Once Game of Thrones outpaced George R. R. Martin's writing, I've been impressed with the discussions last season, especially The Storm, and now truly look forward to each week's off-season tour deep dive into other fandoms. The hosts have great chemistry and are experts in a number of properties. Special shout out to their recent successes, Joe's Vanity Fair cover, Dave feature in the motherfucking New York Times, and Neil's growing awesomeness overall. I'm proud of y'all. Keep up the good work. So I'm very proud of Dave too, and Neil. So thank you for saying that.
My awesomeness, it knows no bounds.
It's true. Well, your empire is growing, man.
Sometimes.
It's hard to ignore. All right. And then the last review I'm going to read from the year comes from Zinzi Yaya from Nigeria. 5 stars, perfect companion for Game of Thrones. I started listening to Storm of Spoilers during the last season of Game of Thrones, and I found that it helped make the show even more enjoyable. However, the off-season tour has turned out to be even better, and I absolutely love it. This is an awesome show, and Joanna is one of my favorite podcasters out there. Thank you. The show has given me a whole new appreciation for spoilers, and I look forward to every episode now. 5 smoking stars. So, yeah, that's 5 smoking stars from Nigeria to close out the year. Thank you so much. And, yeah, just one last thank you to everyone for all your reviews all year.
Also,
I was super happy at Nigeria, and then you did that hard. However, and I was like, oh no, does this review turn? But it didn't.
So 2 things. One, also thanks in advance for all the reviews you're going to write in 2018.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's happening. Two, Storm of Spoilers 2018 tour to Nigeria. I'm in.
Oh my God, I would love that.
Yeah.
Have not been to Africa.
Storm of Spoilers tours the world.
Storm of Spoilers Africa.
I'll get on getting a passport, which is something I don't currently have.
You don't have a passport? Okay.
What do I need a passport for? I live in Texas.
Here's my new New Year's resolution. Find an excuse for Neil to get a passport in 2018.
Yep.
That'll be my mission. I'll find some point where for us to go.
Joanna.
It requires you to get a passport.
I should also preface this with, I didn't even want to get a passport to go to the Justice League set in London.
Yeah, but that's a Justice League set. You know, we could do better.
I know we can do better.
So if you're listening around the world and you have an opportunity, like a convention or something like that, that you think the Storm of Spoilers crew should go through just so that Neil can have one stamp on a new passport in 2018, let us know. We do have some stuff. I know that Neil maybe will mention Game of Thrones. We have a couple other things we might be doing in 2018.
Oh, I look forward to learning about them.
I already told you. I'm hoping we get to go to New Orleans. So that's. I'm just going to put that out there in the universe. But we'll.
I don't need a passport for that.
You sure don't.
Conventions
buddy.
And weddings. That's what 2018 looks like.
Yep.
Over here in Gonzales Town. In Gonzales but I mean, I'm up to all those things.
Okay. I'm done.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Pivoting. Staying with Neil, but pivoting topics. Neil. This is we talked about this already segment where occasionally we get those precious pearls of Game of Thrones off-season news. Do you have a pearl for us this week?
I have multiple pearls
from
the bottom of the ocean around the island where the Citadel of Crazy Town is housed. It's been boarded up for now because obviously we're not going to be needing to be there for a while. Anyway, a couple things. One, as Joanna mentioned, Con of Thrones. Tickets are still on sale. Conofthrones.com, May 25th-ish in Dallas, Texas. Another place I don't need a passport to go.
You don't even need an airplane ticket if you don't want to.
I'm just going to just drive there. It's going to be great.
Drive on down.
It'll make it easier to travel with my sword.
We did have someone tweet at us asking, like, if there was a particular day that they should plan to come, if we had, like, something special planned for the Friday or the Saturday. If last year is any indication, we will be busy and present every single day of the convention. So there isn't, like, a particular day where you would sort of get to interact with us more than any other day necessarily. So come any day, we will be there. Was there, like, one particular day you guys loved the most last year? The Saturday, maybe?
Yeah, I think middle days and conventions are really good days if you could do one. But that's also what makes them really quick to sell out. So if you can, middle day Con of Thrones. Middle day Con of Thrones.
Yeah, and I mean, there's no guarantee in any way that this will happen again. But our main show, when we actually did Storm of Spoilers, was on the final day. But who knows what'll happen this year. So, yeah. There's that.
Yes, Con of Thrones.
All right, I have other stuff to talk about. A couple of the cast. Although Emilia Clarke said this week that the cast is on some sort of social media ban. Yes. Obviously, like
for like a year's long social media ban.
I don't know about
while they're shooting.
Like, like, she used to post, they used to post stuff from, I'm sorry to, like, jump in on what
you're saying. This is good.
Like,
context.
Well, I, when I was writing about this, I was like, yeah, no shit, Amelia's on social media ban. She's the one who last year posted that selfie of her and Kit Harington in their winter wear before the episode where she goes up north. So, like, you know, and I think the worst culprit here was maybe Christopher Hivju, who, like, posted photos of, like, himself and Ian Glenn and, like, stuff like that. So there's, like, Instagram stuff that, like, just enhances the spoilers we already had, but it's like, here's some physical proof, like, these actors are filming together in this location. So it's not that, like, Amelia Clark can't post shit on Instagram, because she's certainly doing that, and it's not that they can't post photos of themselves, like, out at a bar together, because they've done that too, but I think it's just, like, nothing from, like, filming and the set. They are under wraps, so.
Right. Gotta keep it tight. Keep it tight.
Go ahead. She also said, and I really don't believe this, but this is like, you know, there was already the story that they are going to be filming multiple endings for Game of Thrones this season. And Amelia Clark plus that and said, not only that, but the actors don't know which of the endings is the real ending. So if you ask them what happens, they won't be able to tell you. And I'm like, I don't think that's true at all, that they don't know what the real ending is. Like, there's no, like, Dan and David have known for, I think it's 4 years now, what the ending of Game of Thrones is. There's no way they haven't told, like, Amelia and Kit and, like, whatever at some point, some drunken night in Belfast. No way they don't know that already. But, you know, but it gives them, like, a really convenient thing to say when journalists or fans ask them for the next fucking year and a half, like, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? They can just be like, oh, you know what? We don't know. We filmed all these different endings. I just can't even tell you if I live or I die. I don't know. Like, it reminded me of, like, the Comic-Con panels that I would go to a couple seasons ago for Game of Thrones, and they would just say, we don't have the scripts yet, so we can't tell you whether or not Kit Harington comes back. They all knew Kit Harington was going to come back, but on that panel, they're like, we don't have the scripts, so we don't know what's going to happen. And it's kind of like a version of that. Just perk up your ears and wait to hear all the actors say this. So they're just going to be like, we film multiple endings, we don't know which one's true, so we can't tell you anything, you know?
Yep. Also, I think that it does benefit them to the way that season 7 ended. There's not a ton of, like, cliffhangers. Like, we kind of know where everybody is. And the Christopher Hivju thing has already sort of been outed because he was in that first photo of the script reading. So right. It's not like we're, like, waiting to see who shows up on set at this point. Like, we kind of know where everyone's headed. So I don't know if there's a ton of, like, super spoiler stuff to, at least from, like, the first episode, you know, stuff like that. So they're probably in a much better position this year than they were previously. It will all be, as you mentioned, about the end, which Isaac Hempstead Wright was talking in an interview this week. He said that it will be, quote unquote, sad. But I think he was more or less referring to just the whole notion of not doing Game of Thrones anymore will be sad. Sophie Turner has also called it bittersweet, but that's sort of a long-running George thing. Yeah. So we really don't know anything. Here's what we do know, though. They finally did sort of parse together who's directing which episodes. Fabian Wagner, he's German, did an interview this week because he is, you know, he shot Justice League, which is a thing, and confirmed that he and Miguel Sapochnik are doing 2 episodes in season 8, and they will be episodes 3 and 5. So a lot of folks are assuming that those are going to be the battle episodes, because Miguel Sapochnik is Battle of the Bastards guy. He's the big man, which also means that David Nutter, who did The Red Wedding, right? David Nutter, if I remember correctly?
I think so.
So he's doing 3 episodes. He will do episode 1, which will be written by Dave Hill, episode 2, which will be written by Brian Cogman, and episode 4, which will be written by Dave and Dan, and then Dave and Dan are going to write and direct the finale. So some of this was predicted.
Here's what I'll say.
Go.
I'm if anyone has earned the ability to direct the final episode of Game of Thrones, it's Dave and Dan, sure. But if I were showrunners, I would give the final episode of my show to like the best director I could think of, which is probably not myself, probably.
That's fair.
That being said, there is like, I don't hate Dave and Dan, I don't, but there is a malicious side of me that's like, if there's going to be shit raining down on the finale, which like, I can't think of a big TV finale in the last 5 years that didn't have shit rain down on it, it's going to land on squarely on Dave and Dan. They're following on that sword, right? They're going to take the entire praise or censure for that final episode. Unless you know, they want to try to shift it onto George, I don't know.
Maybe they're doing it bravely. Like maybe they want those other directors and writers to not have any baggage going into, say, spinoffs or something like that. It'll be interesting. You know what that? You know what else that kind of says to me is that the finale won't have as much action in it as the other episodes.
Right. If you have Sapochnik on your crew.
And he's doing 3 and 5. Action. That's a big battle in 3 and a big battle in 5. And then 6 and 7 are like, or no, and then 6 is like a cleanup episode.
Isn't like the title of director on seasons of Game of Thrones occasionally loose anyway?
Not really.
Like everybody's, they're like responsible for their storylines and then the different locations, but wouldn't it be like super easy to just shoot an action scene somewhere else?
They do that. They do it. They do it like kind of sparingly, though. You know, like when I talked to Jack Bender, he did say like, you know, one thing he shot ended up in someone else's episode and vice versa. But like, for the most part, I don't think that they do it that way. That's not to say that Sapochnik couldn't direct some action or that Dave and Dan won't direct some action for the final episode. But I don't I agree with Neil that I bet, given that you have Sapochnik there, that your big, big battle episode that we all expect there must be one final big battle is going to be number 5. And then number 6 is going to be the aftermath. And that's just been that was how Game of Thrones operated for so long, right? Episode 9 is your big whatever episode, then episode 10 is the aftermath. So.
Right. And they always have had certain directors that they'll bring in for those big battle episodes, because I think there's just like another level of coordination that needs to go into those episodes. So like, even, you know, Blackwater, Watchers on the Wall, they brought in Neil Marshall. So like, they know enough about their own limitations, it seems, to know that if you're going to do Battle of the Bastards, you actually need to hand it over to somebody with some bigger ideas, maybe, for how the action gets coordinated. So I think that's interesting. And also interesting that Fabian Wagner was very quick to offer all that information up. So he's probably going to be on a social media ban here soon.
Fabian's the one who like blew up the whole like notion that he and Sapochnik were returning with like an Instagram post. It's like, hey, the Dream Team's back. And then like HBO's like, here are the directors for season.
But it's good.
So,
I mean,
I think they don't give a shit. They're like, you need us more than we need you. Please direct your complaints to my pile of Emmys. And good day, sir.
Oh, yeah.
Ed, good day.
DPs, they're very quick to just be like, yeah, look, here's the stub for my plane ticket returning to Ireland. I'm going back to shoot Game of Thrones. What's the big deal? All right, cool. So that's all the Game of Thrones stuff I wanted to talk about this week. We do also, guys, we have Star Wars stuff that we need to talk about, which, as I mentioned off air, I'm super excited about talking Star Wars some more. But we have
not
a couple
your sarcasm voice, Neil Miller.
We have some Star Wars questions that I thought that I let Dave choose, because there were a lot of them and I didn't know how much of a rabbit hole we wanted to go down. I may regret this decision, but Dave, which of these Star Wars questions do you want to talk about?
All right. So I think our first one was from Caitlin, who said, Joanna asked for comments on Snoke. Can we definitively disprove the theory that Snoke is Darth Sidious? One moment. If you haven't seen The Last Jedi, skip ahead like 3 minutes. Okay, go ahead, Joanna.
What?
Can we definitively disprove the theory that Snoke is Darth Sidious?
Definitively? I don't think so.
Not until the Snoke Origins book comes out.
Definitively, I don't think so, but I think if he were, it would have, I feel like it would have come up.
Snoke is no one. He doesn't matter.
Dave?
No, I think that's fair. We can't definitively say anything, but it doesn't seem to be the case.
Yeah. I wouldn't bet the farm on it, but I might bet a cow on it.
Snoke is Rey's parents.
He is the resurrected corpse of a junker from Jakku. All right.
Yeah, that is like half of his face was just squished in the other half of his face.
Question. Did we preface this with like, oh, wait, you already said last. You did say Last Jedi spoilers. Okay, sorry. Okay.
I did, but I'm trying to fit it in that gap.
Here's the question I have about Rey's parents. Can I ask you a question?
Oh, God.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So if they were just junkers who sold her off for drinking money, why did she see a ship flying away from the planet when she was given to Unkar Plot as a kid?
Because they got in the ship with their drinking money and went to go drink somewhere.
But then they came back to Jakku and died and are in a pauper's grave?
Who said they left Jakku?
Yeah, well, ships can go on the same planet.
But it looked like it was leaving the planet.
Everything looks like it's leaving the planet when it flies up into the sky, Neil.
That's not true. Like, I've been to airports. You can't fool
me. Maybe they're buried in a desert on the other side of Jakku. In a pauper's grave in a desert on the other side of
Jakku. I'm just saying, Rey's parents, hashtag still matter.
Oh, buddy.
Move on with your more serious discussion.
All right. These other three questions are from Mark in New York, who wrote in with four questions, but the first one's like a little bit too spoily for even a non-spoiler section and up for debate. So these other three I think I could answer, though. So number one, the Star Destroyer could not travel in conventional space at the same speed as the Rebel ship could. Why did they not send one or two ships for a small jump ahead, then turn and come back instead of lamely following them for hours and hours? Because space works in more than two dimensions, and you can't surround them in three-dimensional space.
I don't understand that.
All right, so he's saying why not send Star Destroyers to jump ahead of the Rebel fleet, turn around, and trap them?
Yeah.
Because outer space works in three dimensions, so you would have to cover them from eight cardinal points that they would have to be able to not maneuver through. So you can't cut off the Rebels because you could go up and down and side to side and diagonal. You can't.
When you're flying through space. I'm sorry. I'm trying to be Oscar Isaac, who's like, explain this to me like I'm a child. When you're flying through space, it's not like you're on a road.
Right.
I'm driving down the 101, and if they just like leap forward onto like further down the 101, they can surprise me. Because they might end up like 2,000 feet in the air above me or below me because they don't know what trajectory I'm going to take. Yeah.
In order for them to jump ahead of them and turn around, they would need to surround them like a sphere of ships pointed at them in order to actually stop them from escaping.
Wow. I actually got to understanding that. I didn't think I was going to get there. Okay, next.
Star Trek II Wrath of Khan has a whole concluding bit about this where Kirk hides above Khan and Khan doesn't think because he's not thinking three-dimensionally. All right. Next question. Does the tracking ship not have a sensor to alert them that the tracker was taken offline so then a secondary ship would track them? Rose and Finn actually answered this question in the dialogue. It takes one system cycle for them to notice, which takes 6 minutes. So there is like a thing, but it takes 6 minutes to get to command.
6 minutes, they would have enough time to jump away. That 6 minute window would be enough time for them to jump away.
Correct.
Right.
Number four, why didn't the Rebels use any of their small ships on autopilot to turn around and do exactly what the Rebel cruiser did? Because the point of the movie is to not be stupidly heroic right at the beginning and cost a lot of people needless lives. It's to act out of desperation to save the things you love. You can't just turn around and start blowing things up and suicide bombing things. That's not how the rebellion works.
Okay.
That's why it's so amazing when Holdo does it.
It's interesting to me that you say this, because one of the few rational complaints I saw about The Last Jedi. Now, there's like plenty of rational complaints, but one of the more compelling rational complaints I saw was that someone who didn't understand the distinction between why what Holdo does is correct and brave and why what Finn was attempting to do was foolhardy and wrong. And I agree. I don't think the movie makes a clear distinction between those two acts and why one's right and one's wrong. Is Holdo's action right because she doesn't have a scrappy little mechanic who's in love with her? Like, I don't know.
Because she's single?
Yeah.
As a single person, that's relationship-ist.
As a single woman of a certain age, you're really useless on this earth anyway, so you might as well go ahead and sacrifice your life.
It's called the cat lady conundrum.
Yeah, exactly.
For people who jumped ahead 3 minutes, jump ahead another 2 minutes.
Yeah.
So when Leia is talking to Poe about why Holdo didn't share a plan, it's because she didn't want to be a hero.
Sure.
She just wanted to do what was best.
Yeah.
That's supposed to be our signaling difference. Finn does it as like this heroic, selfless act, even after Poe's told him to turn back. And at the beginning, Poe takes out the dreadnought because they're not going to have a chance at it. And isn't it going to be amazing? So those are what signals bad decisions. Holdo's decision is one that she makes when she sees the transports being blown up out of desperation.
Yeah,
there's like
Finn,
a whole
Finn
Laura Dern's face thing.
Yes, I saw her face, but like Finn makes this decision because there's a ray blasting the hangar of the like surviving members of the resistance. It's the same thing. And like I kind of understand the distinction between what Holdo does and what Poe does, because what Poe does is showboating and what Holdo does isn't. But I don't think that's what Finn isn't like showboating. Finn is thinking about like, I mean, mostly Rey, but other people, where he's just sort of like, no, they can't win. I have to stop them. Like that's what Laura Dern's thinking too. I see the difference between Poe and Holdo. I really don't see the difference between Holdo and Finn.
I mean, it's close, but the movie tries to signal by like having him disobey an order. So like Poe learns the lesson and backs off, and Finn doesn't learn the lesson. He characteristically for Finn overlearns his lesson, and he's like, "No, the resistance is all that matters," and has to be like drawn back. Much like his overzealousness with using a lightsaber at the end of The Force Awakens. It makes sense to me.
Well, then when is the issue then that no one was above Holdo to give her a command to stop? That Leia
if we're talking
just,
about,
like, let her go or whatever. You know what I mean?
If we're talking about like the minimum amount to communicate intent to like an audience, I think it's there in the line that no one like ordered her. And in Leia's line...
Like
that
kind of,
she doesn't want to be a hero.
Well, I get like, because Leia's trying to teach Poe a lesson that Poe learns throughout the film, which is like, you know, and like what Poe does at the beginning, he disobeys Leia's orders and he gets a bunch of people killed as a result, right? But Holdo is just trying to sacrifice herself, and so is Finn. Finn's not like, no, everyone else has to stay with me. He's like, I'm going to do this. I'm just going to hurl myself down the barrel of this gun to save everyone, you know? So I hear what you're saying, Dave. I disagree. I don't think that the movie did enough of a good job to distinguish those two actions, other than what Neil is saying, which is the cat lady conundrum. So
I hope that becomes a thing. I want to see that on the Wikipedia someday.
Cat lady conundrum. Too. From one cat lady to another, Holdo.
Well, yeah, and like no one, Holdo just didn't have a person.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Should have been Leia. Okay. Anyway.
Well, that was Mark from New York's questions, but we're going to take a very short break then continue.
Wait.
Oh,
the what? One Star Wars email that you conveniently didn't read comes from someone else. I just lost it. Where did it go? I think it was someone named Katie, but let's just double check. Yep. Katie Linder. The title of her email is Uncanny Valley. She says, I'm with Joanna as usual, Re Snoke. Walking Snoke was definitely Uncanny Valley material. So, you know, thanks, Katie, for me.
But didn't we also get like a tweet or something from someone who was like,
I forgot to read the non-question Star Wars statement.
Yeah,
that against me.
That agreed with me.
In the question,
but we also got one from somebody who like works with people who have hip problems and said that Snoke's walk is like dead on.
But once again, the issue is like they never talk about Snoke's hip problem in the movie.
But he's clearly like a million years old, so obviously he has hip problems.
So obviously his hip is up near his earlobe. It just I don't know. All right. Anyway.
All right. We're gonna take a break and then continue this because spoiler alert on Star Wars spoilers. A Star Wars is also my pick for defining movie of 2017. Oh my God! Really? Yes. Stay tuned. And we're back to continue talking about The Last Jedi, but I guess with less very specific spoilers, if you happen to skip into this one, you could probably stick around. To kick off our great debate, we're going to start with our movie section. The defining movie of 2017, I'm picking The Last Jedi, once again, going with my heart, going with my gut, and maybe going after 5 days of debating this movie online. I think that The Last Jedi is going to end up being the thing from 2017 that's going to have made an impact on me, both because there's a lot to digest in the movie, so unlike something like Force Awakens, I feel like I will still be asking questions about it, maybe in like February, that aren't about parentage or the background of a villain. Maybe they will be about those things. I don't want to get into what questions I will or will not have. The point is, I'm going to have questions for longer than something like Rogue One, which was entertaining but sort of like wore off. I think that the build-up to it, for somebody who lives Star Wars like I do, allowed the movie to be peppered throughout 2017, and it consistently became my escape from the realities of 2017. And I don't know if this is going to be in the spirit of other people's choices. If we decided to go for like the best thing that had something to say about 2017, mine is like so often a galaxy far, far away, but instantly accessible through a book or a comic book or a blog report or the movie itself, that it was my little escape, and therefore my nominee for the defining movie of 2017, kind of a vague premise that's going to allow for a lot of cool answers, I think. Joanna, what's your pick?
We got a lot of really interesting nominations from people, and so that I kind of want them to, like, I'll just say this. Some of my other picks are covered by a good email, so I will say that I'm going to pick, for me, the film Lady Bird, and here's why.
Big Dave Matthews Band fan.
I am. 2017 will go down as the year of Dave Matthews. No, okay. So this is Greta Gerwig's film starring Saoirse Ronan. That's like a very, very autobiographical film about her experience as a high school senior in Sacramento and deciding where to go to college and her relationship with her mom and her friends, stuff like that. It takes place over the course of about a year. And what I think 2017, there's no way for us, I know people don't like it when we do this, but there's no way for us to talk about this year without talking about politics, because politics, like, we talk about the end of monoculture and the end of like something that everyone's focusing on. But when it comes to America, like the one show we were all watching was the Trump show. Like, it just, there's no way it did not define our year, Trump. Which is, I think, why one of our listeners nominated The Apprentice as defining TV shows. So the aftermath of the Trump election is this like incredible, or this is part of 2016 too, but this incredible fractured divisiveness of the year in terms of like, you know, this is maybe too personal, but I haven't been on speaking terms with my dad like pretty much all year because he voted for Trump and still supports Trump. And I really have trouble reconciling that. So this year has been a lot about like what makes us different and us shouting from two sides of something. That's what the conversation around the Last Jedi feels like to me, is like just a continuation of this, like people shouting across the void of like, no, my opinion's right. No, my opinion's right. what I love about Lady Bird and why it feels like a healing sort of end to the year is that everyone who I've talked to who's seen it, and granted, this is a much smaller film. It's nowhere near as big, and it's not a genre film, which I know you guys like us to talk about a lot. But everyone I've talked to who's seen this film, A, loves it, and B, it resonates with them on a very personal level. And that's some kind of weird magic that Greta Gerwig pulled off. She told a very, very, very specific to her story, which somehow almost everyone seeing it feels a bit of that story in their own life. Whether or not you had a good relationship with your mom, whether or not you grew up, like whether or not you were ever a teenage girl, you know, I've talked to like men who are like, oh, that's my story, you know, so I don't know. There's just something very interesting about telling a very, very, very specific and very true, emotionally honest story, and that specificity somehow making that story more general. And so what I like about Lady Bird is it really is a great uniter among people who have seen it in terms of, like, I feel a shared experience reflected back in that movie on me. So that's my incredible heady way of saying it's like a wishful thinking representative of 2017. Is like, I wish we could all find common ground, even in the things that like have nothing to do, even if you're like, you know, a black dude from North Carolina. So like, you know, you're not a white chick from California, but like there is something about this movie that you see yourself in. And that is like ideally the way forward for this great nation of ours. So that's my ramble about Lady Bird.
Man, that's good. All right. It's a good case.
Yeah.
I'm so inspired that I think I'm just going to watch Lady Bird tonight.
Yeah, that's your new plan and was not at all your
plan
before this podcast.
Not at all my plan before this. Those are both really good ones, guys. But here's my problem. One, with The Last Jedi, let's say we take this to the thought experiment extreme and say, like, in 10 years, what are we going to remember? I don't know if it's going to be The Last Jedi so much as the fact that there are, like, 10 new Star Wars films in between now and then. So who knows? Lady Bird, tough one. Actually tough, because Greta Gerwig's great. But there are a lot of great Greta Gerwig movies. In fact, there's a really great article on a website called Film School Rejects about the unofficial Greta Gerwig trilogy, which I think is a good read from one of my younger writers.
Francis Ha.
Francis Ha.
Liberal Arts?
I don't know. God, I didn't expect you to put me on the spot.
Anyway, Film School Reject. You mean one installment in the Great Millerverse that is dominating the pop culture?
That is not the Mark Millerverse.
Not the Mark Millerverse. Anyway.
All right. So.
But I have chosen a film.
Throwing dirt on our installments.
Okay. Yeah, that's. Oh, Mistress America was the third one.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
But let's talk about Get Out for a second. Because Get Out is a movie that I saw at Sundance in January of 2017, and it was. You know, at that point in our time as a people, we were still very much raw. It was a raw nerve kind of time in January. We had just suffered through... I think I was literally watching this a few days before or after the inauguration of Terrible Cheeto Man. And it felt like both someone pinching the raw nerve, because it's all about this sort of... It's just this hyper sci-fi insidious inequality thing going on. But it also felt like that moment where someone found an entertaining way to present some of the greater issues that we face. And it's also a very thrilling, interesting, well-acted movie from someone whose work in comedy we'd enjoyed for so long, in Jordan Peele. So I think Get Out really does, and I have more predictions to make. Like, I feel like this is going to be a genre film that breaks through and probably gets nominated for Best Picture.
Oh yeah, I agree.
So I think we're going to remember the rise of Get Out.
No, the fact that Get Out, I mean, I co-host an Oscar podcast, Little Gold Men. The fact that Get Out is still in the conversation now, when it came out in, like, what, March, I think? I could be wrong, but thereabouts, March, April. Like, that's insane. That's an insane legs on a genre film. That never happens. So, yeah, I mean, you have to, I mean, I'm not trying to bolster your claim against my own interests, but you have to give Get Out credit for, like, you know, capitalizing on a conversation that the country was already having and doing it in, like, a really funny, entertaining way. So it's not, like, so challenging that you can't, like, sort of get lost in it. And the fact that it's just still going is incredible. I'm so happy for Jordan Peele.
One of those movies that really does a wonderful job of contextualizing an experience that a lot of its audience probably doesn't understand. Mm-hmm. You know, the anxieties that people of color have in America. And what's really interesting is how prescient it was, the fact that it was a movie that was done before Trump was elected. And it was sort of the right movie for the moment, despite the fact that it was made before it was really needed for the moment.
I would say that it was already, I mean, that's a conversation that we've been having, like, throughout the whole Black Lives Matter movement, and should have been happening long before. But, like, that was definitely in the cultural conversation for a while. But your larger point stands, I think.
Yep. So Get Out. I don't think we're going to forget Get Out anytime soon.
Mm-hmm. Who wants to read this email from Kat?
I can do it. This email is from Kat in Mississippi, who says, she didn't cough, but I'm going to cough right now. All right. Kat says, my pick for the most influential and defining movie of 2017 would have to be Wonder Woman. I have often complained that we don't see enough, or any that are worth anything, feature big blockbuster films featuring a dynamic, strong, and altogether compelling female up front and center. Especially if we are talking about the superhero franchises. And this is why I believe Wonder Woman is so important. Not only did she put so much more energy back into the DCEU
for a time,
but it was absolutely perfectly timed. It was right about that time that this movie came out that women across the country decided to stand up and say enough is enough when it comes to men abusing their power. Our country may be in a dark, dark time politically, but for women, we are seeing some incredible strides being made. From every woman who raised their hand saying hashtag me too, to the black and minority women of Alabama standing up and voting against Roy Moore. I hope you listened to last week's episode. I hope that when I look back at 2017, I am not sad for the state of the country during this time, but I remember the strength that women across this country showed. And that movie that defines that strength, hope, and resilience, Wonder Woman for sure.
Tough one to beat. She makes excellent points there.
Can I add a late in the game Twitter nomination?
Sure.
I guess, but then we have to eliminate one of these noms, right?
Yeah. I think that's right. Okay. Because I don't think this one's getting through. I just like the way it's phrased. This is from at Mr. Screen Addict Jefferson Grubbs, who says, in less than 280 characters, makes his case, which is, does any movie sum up 2017 better than Mother? Audiences were as divided on it as our country is on everything. It was a mess. It was beautiful. It was hilarious. It was painful. Men were horrible to women. Women got their revenge. And in the end, it all burned to the ground. So that's Jefferson's case for Mother, which is not a bad one, I think.
Yeah, you have to say it. Mother! Mother! Every time.
Yeah, the exclamation mark. Mother! But you have to, like, make sure you keep the M quiet because it's lowercase. So it's like, Mother! I don't know.
Mother!
Yeah.
No, sorry. That's too
There's
hard
like
to
a
do.
Gasp in the middle of it. It's like an om prayer.
It's a challenge. I mean, this is the film that I think ultimately broke up the, like, America's Sweethearts, Jennifer Lawrence and Darren Aronofsky. So, you know.
Oh, yes.
It's probably for the best at this point.
If it wasn't the movie, it was the press tour where he decided he needed to explain the movie before people saw the movie. all right, so I think we're going to go to the Twitter poll with The Last Jedi, Lady Bird, Get Out, and Wonder Woman. Sounds pretty 2017 to me.
The only other one that I would put out there that a lot of people on Twitter at least put up is The Shape of Water, which is not a movie that landed with me at all. I don't know why. Maybe I'm dead inside. But a lot.
No, sorry. It's really... Bad joke. I'm just going to let it go.
No, it's okay. I can be dead inside. But like a lot of people, Shape of Water is really hitting hard for a lot of people.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Because it's a really pretty movie, but I don't, it didn't feel it on a next level. All I could do was make fish phallus jokes afterwards. Because I am like a 15-year-old. But to me, it just felt like...
That was like an apparently a retractable situation. But
yeah.
I wanted to love that movie. And like no one like cries or gets swept away easier at a movie than I do. But Shape of Water just didn't touch me. I love Sally Hawkins. I think she did a great job. I thought Richard Jenkins did a great job. Doug Jones is always great. But like, I don't know. There's something about the way that story was told. It just didn't get deeper. It didn't get under my skin. So I wouldn't stump for Shape of Water. I was just going to let any of you guys do so if you wanted to. Sounds like not so much. But I wanted to make sure.
Yeah, I don't know if I would leap it over any of these other. Because, I mean, like Wonder Woman, for instance, as far as the listener suggestions go, like I was writing a piece this week for a website that I've previously named about the scenes.
Film School Rejects?
Yes, about the best scenes of 2017. And so I picked the No Man's Land sequence because I can't even tell you how many, like, people I know, mostly women, who said that they just cried during that scene because it was such a like a release of so many years of anticipating seeing that on screen. Mm-hmm. And didn't quite feel that way about any of the Shape of Water. And I haven't really heard too many people who have said that it reached them that deeply, even though it's a very pretty, nice movie.
Something that I've learned talking to a lot of award season pundits. I mean, I know this isn't an award season podcast, but when we talk about the defining movie of the year, it's like that's sort of in the same pool as like what might win Best Picture, right? Most of us, I think everyone on this podcast, no, Neil has, but like it's possible that once The Post comes out in wide release, people will see that as the defining moment of the year because of this like conversation about the press and the corrupt government and stuff like that. But
well, also because Steven Spielberg made it this year for this year,
right?
So
for this
like,
year, meh. Yeah, exactly. But Shape of Water, at least out of the people in Los Angeles who are, for the most part, the people who vote for Oscar, love Shape of Water. This is what I have learned talking to a lot of industry people out of Los Angeles, which means it might become the Best Picture winner just because there isn't like a clear favorite elsewhere. And I didn't really get it before I saw it, but when I saw it, like it's a movie that is so much about the magic of movies, and the Academy loves that shit.
We sit
artist.
In the dark and paint our dreams with light.
So, Shape of Water, even though you, Neil, and I feel very tepid on it, and Dave, I believe, hasn't seen it, like, might end up being Best Picture. Not that that makes it a defining movie of 2017, it just makes it worth discussing. But for all that bullshit that I've just added to our list, I think our list is still probably, go ahead, Dave.
The Last Jedi, Lady Bird, Get Out, and Wonder Woman. Twitter.com/DharmaSpoilers.
I feel like this is going to be a race between Get Out and Wonder Woman. So
I think it's going to end up being a race as to what people saw most recently, which I hope means I win.
I don't want... guys, if you're listening to this, don't let recency bias fool you. Don't do it.
Yeah, we can't let Star... There's a Star Wars movie every year.
I mean,
yeah,
I will
this,
say that,
this
like,
one was better. This was more memorable. This one ruined everything, Neil.
I think the shitty conversation around this particular Star Wars is very 2017.
Well, I mean, we can't just talk. Yeah, yeah, yes. Thank you. Thank you, Joanna. I was going to say, if we were just doing the movie, then I'd be like, Lady Bird doesn't even take place near this time period. But we're not.
But Get Out has also endured 2017. As a movie.
And the No Man's Land sequence is amazing. There we go, guys. Defining movies of 2017. We're going to take a quick break and then hit up defining TV shows, great debates, right now. All right. Let's go with Joanna first this time, since I kicked off defining movies for defining television show 2017. Joanna Robinson, what's your great debate contender?
Well, we were joking about like what our picks for movie and TV like say about us, like what person we are if we consider this show and this film the two defining like pieces of pop culture of the year. And I come out of like, I think our listeners are a little more populist generally, you know, like we're a Game of Thrones podcast. It's a very popular show. Our listeners like genre also, like that's a big thing. So I don't think I'm going to be like the most popular kid in class with my pick, which is The Leftovers, which is a criminally underseen HBO series that, yes, made it at the top of most critics' picks list for the number one film TV show of the year. But that does not mean anything. It's not highly rated, so not a lot of people watched it, so you know. But that being said, The Leftovers is like literally what happens to people when they believe the world is going to end. That's what season three is about. People believe that like an apocalypse is coming, and it's just sort of like it's a breakdown of civilization. Some people, you know, choose to take their own lives. Some people do other extremes. And then it's just sort of like, I mean, I don't know, spoiler alert for The Leftovers. Then what happens when the world doesn't end? And you have to like deal with that. And how do you find connection with people when everything feels so uncertain all the time? How can you form a loving relationship and actually connect with another human being when anything could end at any given time at all? Which is sort of like what 2017 has felt like, is just like there are these peaks of hysteria, like, oh, our president is fighting with North Korea and they've got like weapons and oh, the world's going to end. And so it's about like a constant scramble, a constant fearful apprehension. And that takes its toll on really sinking into connections with other human beings. And The Leftovers ultimately offers up like a very hopeful vision of that, which is surprising for a show that started as bleak as it did. I really hated season one of that show. But by season three, I just think it's one of the most brilliant things I've ever seen in my life. And I have not... You know, if weeping hard is a metric of like importance, I've not wept harder at a TV show in recent memory than I wept at The Leftovers finale, which I think is a perfect series finale. So The Leftovers, you know, so here's what I'll say. I don't think I'm going to win this poll at all with my pick. I think the three of us talking here know what's going to win, and it's, I don't even think it's any of our picks, but if you have time over the holidays and value my opinion, I really do recommend that you catch up with The Leftovers, which is three short seasons. And I would even say you can skip season one and start with season two and just watch it. Leftovers, my pick.
That's a pretty good one. Although that does sound like the show of 2018. Is this 2018 where we're all going to die?
Well, we all think we're going to die in 2018, and then we don't, and then that's the surprising part. But like what's the metaphor going to be? Like the Mueller investigation ends, but the Trump presidency continues, right. And then we're all like, okay.
Now we have to drink the Kool-Aid.
And now I have to vote for Congress like I thought I had to vote for Congress.
Well,
Damn it.
That's the thing is like, I think that's sort of been the lesson of 2018 is like, there's been this sort of expectation. I mean, if you want to define it purely as Trump, but like there's been this idea that like we don't have to do the hard work, that it's going to be some magic bullet, some like leaked email, some magic bullet that's going to stop.
Some P tape.
Something that we disagree with. A lot of us.
I hope it's some P tape.
Not everyone listening to this podcast necessarily disagrees, but like, you know, those of us who do. But I think what, you know, people who know more about this than I do cautioned is that it's something that's going to take a long time if it happens at all. And like the harder and more important work is like showing up to the polls in 2018 and like actually voting and all this sort of stuff. And like, you're like, no, that's hard. I just want a scandal to come and fix everything. And then we like reboot. I don't know. So that's The Leftovers really is about like doing the hard work of connecting with people and not just, I don't know, reactionary stuff. Anyway.
So you got to do the hard work and watch The Leftovers.
not the hardest work, which is season one. I really just don't think you have to. All right. Next.
I'll go next. I'm going to pick Twin Peaks The Return, the Showtime David Lynch and Mark Frost 18 episode third season of Twin Peaks, the early 90s hit. That's sort of like odd television. I'm not going to try to explain Twin Peaks to you. What I'm going to say is that while Twin Peaks The Return was on over the summer, it delivered some of the best hours of television I've seen this year. Especially episode 8, which is geared right towards me. Not only does it have Nine Inch Nails playing an entire song all the way through as the Nine Inch Nails, but it has an entire silent sequence that starts with an atomic bomb and goes into some old school photographic special effects mixed with a bunch of computer graphic effects to create a visual storytelling of basically the birth of evil, or how evil got into the Twin Peaks universe from another place. It was really amazing while it was being broadcast that Showtime would just give the reins to a filmmaker to make this complete a vision. And then it's such a complete vision and done in such a David Lynch manner that it ended up, I feel, absorbing a lot of my moods and turning them into themes within itself because it's so opaque. So a lot of the actors that are now dead appearing changed the way that they appeared in the series in a way that I'm not sure how much they were aware of. In some cases, the actors already passed away. In other cases, the entire performance was shot without that necessarily happening. And then, yeah, the idea of how it ends, which I also don't want to spoil, is I think one of the rare occasions that a TV series has ended with a cliffhanger, and I was like expecting it and also not expecting anything beyond this, and I think I would have seen a complete story. But you know, whether or not the original Dougie Jones of 2017 did it for you is probably going to change your mileage on Twin Peaks The Return. But for me, it's the defining show of 2017. Boom.
I think also something really fascinating that Twin Peaks does is, I mean, once again, this is another low-rated show. Like, not a lot of people watched those, but those of us who watched it, like, it was just this really compelling situation where, like, literally, because there were no screeners, literally no one knew week to week what was going to happen. And that was just, like, a very unique and special experience. And there's also this, you know, this year and every year, it seems like now, is this, like, crazy, weird, and often cheap nostalgia thing as part of it all. Like the fact that The Office is maybe coming back to NBC and I just want to kill myself. Like, but what Twin Peaks does is Twin Peaks offered like a return to this world that was, you know, a thing in the 90s, with actually something interesting to say, which is really rare for, a nostalgia vehicle like this. I just really admire what they pulled off here.
It's especially amazing given what I know, what little few things I know about our return to the X-Files universe in a few weeks. Twin Peaks, why can't more shows be like you? Neil, what's your pick for defining TV show 2017?
Mm-hmm. Hey, remember when we talked about what kind of people we are? Mm-hmm. I'm the guy who cheats and picks Game of Thrones.
I was going to say really quickly, should Dave say what kind of person he is?
Dave, what kind of person are you?
Oh, what kind of person was I? Franchise make a fan person? That sounds about right. I did read all the Twin Peaks novels that were released this year. There were two.
Yeah, it was like friendly, but it was like friendly franchise guy.
Yeah, that's me. The friendly franchise guy.
Your friendly neighborhood franchise guy.
But then we got in that whole spat about Admiral Holdo's true meanings at the beginning, and I couldn't enter friendly, but that's what it was supposed to be.
Yeah, that's fair. No, I'm picking Game of Thrones because we're a Game of Thrones podcast. Yeah. Also, there's something about season 7 of Game of Thrones that feels very 2017. It starts off kind of rocky, and then sort of there's a lot of fire and fury. And then it kind of ends with a little bit of triumph. We had, I don't want to compare these two too directly, but we had Doug Jones winning at the end of 2017 in our cultural lives, and we had El Boat Sex in Game of Thrones.
Those are the same thing.
Clearly, those are the same thing. But I think, when it comes to this era of popular culture, there is no bigger fish than Game of Thrones. And I think 2017 will be remembered kind of as the end of the consistent rhythm of Game of Thrones, because we are now going to have to wait until the world ends to get season 8. So, season 7 could very well be the last season of Game of Thrones. So,
Neil,
you never know.
What the hell are you saying? Jesus Christ.
Well, I mean, it's more likely George R. R. Martin finish a book in an apocalyptic wasteland than a TV show be produced in an apocalyptic wasteland.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe George is hoping for the apocalypse.
Maybe George
bets the apocalypse.
He's like sliding into Trump's DMs, and then he just pushed the button.
And then he gets to finish his book, and then he gets to there becomes this whole thing where bards go around the post-apocalyptic landscape performing the final book of Game of Thrones. It's Station 11 or something.
Gather around, children. Yeah. The Game of Thrones crier has come to tell us the ending.
I didn't expect for this to get so dark. I just wanted to. I wanted an easy win.
Speaking of dark, I'm going to read an email we got from Julie, which is representative of about 1,000 emails we got and tweets. Which Julie writes, I think the most defining show of 2017 is The Handmaid's Tale. You can't discuss 2017 without discussing politics, and The Handmaid's Tale is eerily resonant. More eerie that it was created prior to the 2016 election and everything that followed. No, we're not living in a dystopian future yet, but between the election, the ever-growing allegations against sex monsters, and hashtag MeToo, it rings very close to home. Plus, the acting, writing, and directing are fantastic, and it is a gorgeous show to watch. So yes, the pop culture that Neil most regrets missing out on is the defining pop culture of 2017.
Yeah, that actually does sound about right for me. It's pretty par for the course.
Per most of our listeners. That was the number one answer we got.
On Facebook, in email, on Twitter, it was Handmaid's Tale. Even people who haven't watched Handmaid's Tale were emailing us to be like, I haven't seen it, but I'm pretty sure that's the one.
Yeah, it's definitely this.
I want to be on the winning team right out of the gate with this one, and it's The Handmaid's.
It's really, it's evidence of our tribalism as a society.
But it's good. It's good when, if you would have asked me in 2016, would Hulu have the representative show of 2017, I would have been like, no. So good for Hulu and their new Disney overlords.
Oh, it got dark again.
Oh, the solution is embedded in the problem. What an interesting problem.
Interesting. We have one last email that I insisted we include. Are you guys okay with me reading this one?
Yeah, go for it.
All right, I insisted we include this one from Eric in Hyde Park because it's not really one show, but it's a genre. I just think it's interesting. Eric says, I'm going to go out on a limb here. In my opinion, the defining TV shows... that's a cheat right there. The defining TV shows of 2017 are late night talk shows like Late Night with Seth Meyers, Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, Full Frontal with Samantha Bee, The Opposition with Jordan Klepper, The Daily Show with Trevor Noah, Late Show with Stephen Colbert. Is it that? I think it's Late Night with Stephen Colbert. Anyway.
No, it's The Late Show.
Okay, sorry. The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. My bad. I'm a huge fan of genre television. I love Game of Thrones. The Handmaid's Tale was mesmerizing. Stranger Things was delightful. But late night comedy has been a salve on our nation's collective wound. 2017 has been a fraught and troubling year. We've had scandals and corruption, indictments and guilty pleas, peaceful protests and violent responses. Everywhere we look, there's something in the shadows that scares us. These late-night comedians have shone a light on the things that trouble us, whether it's John Oliver delivering a 22-minute think piece on the Border Patrol or Sam B. investigating Russian troll farms. These comedians do two things for us simultaneously. They educate us and they give us hope. Jordan Klepper has a new show, which has given us a Colbert show to laugh at the alt-right and fact-free trolls. Seth Meyers may be the best on the air right now every day, and he and his staff chip away at the narrative some partisans try to portray as truth. At times, we may feel like the world is burning around us, and it actually is for some of us. Shout out California. But laughter is a sign of hope. Tyrants hate nothing more than the sound of laughter at their expense. And if nothing else, these shows have given some of our nation's most powerful a few sleepless nights. I suppose I would add to Eric's email, great email, that for the first half of the year, I would obviously put Saturday Night Live on the list, because I think that Saturday Night Live did a really good job of like running that conversation for a while. I think it's really dropped the ball with this most recent season, and that may or may not have something to do with the fact that their head writers, Chris Kelly and Sarah Schneider, who are there for exactly one season, the best season the show has had in forever, left this after 1 year. I don't know why. There are expressly stated reasons why, but I don't feel like I know the real reason why. But anyway, they've got different head writers now. The show is like vastly gone downhill. But for half of the year, you know, I think we should put SNL in the mix. So. Mm-hmm.
I would also like, I have one to add to this late night television show that's not necessarily late night television, but a show that is a lot funnier than it gets credit for being, The Rachel Maddow Show. She's real funny.
She is.
I listen to that show as a podcast every day. And even though it brings me down a lot, I also get some laughs.
I think this is accidentally our most political show. But like, here's the thing is like,
it's about 2017. What'd you expect?
Yeah. Well, is that like an accent? Before 2017, when people would say like, people would get mad at us, not just on this show, but many other shows, for talking about politics in their pop culture. They just want to hear about Game of Thrones. They don't want to hear about politics or whatever. And I both like disagree with that, but like kind of understood where it was coming from. But 2017, it just feels so impossible to talk about without talking about politics. And we are three like very liberal leaning people. Hopefully you know that about us by now. You know, so like I don't want, I guess I'd be curious. I know we do have some conservative listeners. If you're still listening, if you haven't thrown your phone across the room in disgust.
The Handmaid's Tale.
I'd be interested to hear from you guys. Like what, like if you're like a engaged in pop culture conservative, like what is the defining show of your 2017? Cause I think a lot of the answers we got were like very much of our mindset, but I'd be interested to hear the other side of that. So
yeah, that would be fascinating. Yeah. Also, it does feel like 2017 is the year that something broke and now everything has politics. Like, you can't go anywhere without it being, without having some sort of political thing.
Yeah, whatever that seal is kind of, like, went away. And then I guess it's not just politics, I feel, but with, like, a lot of ideas about how men should wield power or what is or is not okay and, you know, reactions. I think a lot of people are trying to discuss politics while being more guarded. I don't know. The frustration is what's being vented in all of our media picks turning back to politics, I think. And I think that frustration is going to end up being something we share with conservative listeners that want to write in because I want to figure it out.
I generally don't know. Like, I was listening to Blank Check with our friends Griffin and David Davidson and Griffin Newman, and they were talking about The Last Jedi, and they were talking about, I guess, like right of center film Twitter, which is like this hidden film Twitter that I don't know about.
What?
Where they were talking about the hatred surrounding The Last Jedi that comes from that film Twitter, which I think is not, this is not true of all right of center people, but you know, the opinion that's resistant to maybe some of the more progressive messages of The Last Jedi, like that would be a reason why some people don't like it. But what does the right of center film Twitter love about 2017? I confess, I don't know. Is it like, does Guardians of the Galaxy feel like something like fun and blockbustery that doesn't have a quote unquote liberal agenda? Or like what I don't know. Wonder Woman is probably not it because, you know, ladies. I don't know.
Maybe we should say Zack Snyder's cut of Justice League.
Yes. The unreleased Zack Snyder's.
We know boy. It exists.
We know it's six. Real. Anyway. No, but all kidding aside, I do genuinely want to know. So
we
if
will read those emails.
I will. Oh, shoot. Wait, that reminds me. I promised someone that I would defend. If they wrote in, which I'm not sure they did, someone got really mad at me for something I said about The Last Jedi. And I told them to write in and I would read their defense. Can you guys talk amongst yourselves for a second while I find this?
I will remind people of where they can send these emails.
Mm-hmm.
stormofspoilers@gmail.com. That's our email address. That's where Joanna's looking right now for this email, this mysterious email.
But do we, what have we decided for movies? What are our four movies?
Our four TV shows?
Our four TV shows.
So I believe it's going to be The Handmaid's Tale by overwhelming audience response.
Oh, yeah.
Game of Thrones by Neil and our very nature.
Pandering response.
Yep. Sometimes you just gotta get a win at the end of the year.
And Twin Peaks from me and The Leftovers from Joanna for our little watched weirdos.
Yeah, I think Eric's email makes a very strong case for late night TV, but it is disqualified for picking more than one show.
It's cheating.
Yeah.
Okay, I can't find... This person promised me an email, did not send an email, as far as I can tell, in our email account, so I'm just going to read the tweet that I got instead, which is from Ozymandias at Oz the Great One, who says, "You guys can miss me with that Finn isn't a good character shit, especially Joanna. Finn is literally Star Wars Jorah Mormont, and I don't want to hear any criticism of him." And then I said, "Email some things you like."
Does he have grayscale?
I said, "Email some things you like and I'll read on the show." And then Ozymandias says, "I got you. Expect an email later today." Never sent it, as far as I could find. But
is he talking about how he's always yearning for the unconscious person?
I don't know about an unconscious person, but like loyal to Rey. Like that Rey is the first thing he says when he wakes up. He's like very loyal to her in a way that she may or may not, probably does not reciprocate. Maybe
where's the Khaleesi?
Yeah, it's a really good Jorah impression. Here's what I'll say. I liked Finn in The Force Awakens. I don't like him in The Last Jedi. I don't find him that interesting in The Last Jedi, but I don't think that's John Boyega's fault. I know that there's been this whole like response to The Last Jedi. There's this hashtag, Star Wars hates POC, that was... I can't tell if it was trending over the weekend. A lot of people were insisting to me it was, because of my white feminism, apparently. But so that may or may not be a movement. I can't tell if it's a larger movement of like people frustrated with the way that The Last Jedi treats as characters of color. I actually think The Last Jedi went out of its way to create a story for Finn and for Rose that, you know, and for Poe, to try to give them something to do so that the story wasn't just about Rey and Kylo and Luke. I don't know that it succeeded. We've already talked about the Canto Bight not being like my favorite part of the film. And that is certainly where all of our characters of color are sort of like lumped. But I don't think that was because Lucasfilm or I don't know. I don't want to speak to that because like if that's what you see, if that's your experience, if your experience is like you expected John Boyega's Finn to be the hero of this franchise and all of a sudden he's fucking third fiddle to all these other people, I can understand that frustration. You know, like Finn has a lightsaber in the ads for the first film and now he's like in the B plot. What's that about? So I get that. I do. And I also wish that The Last Jedi had done better by Finn because I did like him in The Force Awakens. So
they should have sent Jorah Mormont to Canto Bight because Jorah would have been like, "This culture does not allow us to park on the beach." And it would have just saved all the trouble.
Because he's like an almanac. I get it.
He would have come back with Justin Theroux, like, no problem. Be like, "Yeah, boom, here's your codebreaker." Yep. Anyway. Jorah, we hope we get to Canto Bites someday. All right. So that is going to do it for our defining TV show and defining movie of 2017. Once again, the polls that will be up at twitter.com/stormspoilers are for the defining television show of 2017, Twin Peaks, The Leftovers, Game of Thrones, The Handmaid's Tale. And for defining movie of 2017, The Last Jedi, Lady Bird, Get Out, and Wonder Woman.
And nice. I just want to say to the person who nominated Westworld as the defining TV show of this year, that show came out in 2016, so it can't be this year. Maybe next year.
Nice try, though.
Maybe next year.
I feel you. I also don't know what year it is sometimes. all right. Neil, what's the future of Storm of Spoilers look like for the next couple of weeks?
Well, we're going to take a week off, which is great. And then we are going to come back the week of the 3rd, the first week of January, with a big 2018 preview mailbag extravaganza. So here's the thing. We're going to talk about 2018 stuff. So we're going to talk about all the good stuff that's coming in the year and all the stuff we anticipate. So if you have questions, email them to us, stormofspoilers@gmail.com. Make sure they are about things that come out in 2018. Go to imdb.com, check to make sure, just so that we, you know, we'll stay on topic here. So we're gonna do basically 2018 preview, you know, the things we're looking forward to the most and the things that we think will define 2018, the raucous year to come or apocalyptic year to come. I'm not sure yet, but that'll be the first week of January. Until then, we're going to be relaxing and chilling, drinking nogs and green milk
season.
And whatever else we can find around here.
All the nogs.
All the nogs.
Straight from the teat. Hey, Dave, didn't you and I have a debate over whether those were teats or whether they were balls in an early photo of that creature?
Oh, God.
Yeah, in a very early photo of that creature, we were like, it's got some really prominent testicles.
I think I said teats and you said testicles. That's what I think.
All right, but I'm almost sure that if I saw something with four bulbous things sitting on a beach, I'd think testicles before I thought teats in the ball area. So I believe you.
That whole scene is still weird, by the way. Like, it's still, I've seen it twice. It's weird. I don't like it. Why does it have to be so uncomfortable? Why is Luke Skywalker smiling? It's weird.
He's a fucking weirdo.
Yeah. Why didn't they make him that weird through the whole movie? Anyway, moving on.
Yes. So until next year, when we will get together and tell you about cool things that you want to hear about in 2018. I don't know. We got like an Avengers movie. Halloween's rebooting again.
Black Panther.
That's just the franchise stuff. There's a Wes Anderson stop motion movie that's coming
out. Another Star Wars movie.
There's another Star Wars movie that's coming out in like 6 months that we haven't seen any footage from.
No Game of Thrones.
Wait, in 6 months?
Isn't it? Isn't it coming out in May?
I thought it got pushed to December.
We'll figure it out by next time we reconvene for the podcast.
That's right. We will know when Solo's coming out and the answers to your questions that you could send to Twitter @StormOfSpoilers or on email to StormOfSpoilers@gmail.com. Until then, though, guys, where can they find more of your work on the internet? Mr. Neil Miller.
Get me over at FilmSchoolRejects.com. We're in the midst of our big hashtag 2017 rewind, which is our big year in review. So I'll be dropping my top 10s. Our TV list drops on Wednesday. By the time y'all hear this, it'll all be there. You can read stuff that I wrote because I don't normally write a lot of stuff. You can also follow me on Twitter @Rejects, and don't forget to follow the show @StormOfSpoilers and email us those questions for 2018 @StormOfSpoilers@gmail.com.
And Joanna Robinson.
You can find me at When You're Feeling Low, just listen to the last 10 minutes of our Last Jedi podcast where we react live to the Alabama election.
That was pretty great.
I just keep listening to it. And it's really charming. And you can find, like, most of my Last Jedi thoughts, if that's still something you're interested in, over at vanityfair.com. Follow me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This. I'll be off, like, from podcasting and writing the week after the holidays, but I will probably be tweeting about whatever thing it is I'm watching on Twitter. So I'll see you guys over there.
And that goes for me as well. If I'm not online writing things, I am tweeting my reactions to everything because it's easier that way. You could follow me on Twitter at DA7E. I have my Last Jedi stuff pinned to the top there. If you want to link surf, you could find the rest of all our fantastic episodes from this year at stormspoilers.com and fightinginthewarroom.com, where you can find my other podcasts with three other smart people. Yeah, we also talk about The Last Jedi this week, but have a lot of back episodes. So until next year, thank you for surviving 2017 with us. One more year to go, and then the sweet release of death.
A long December, and there's reason to believe maybe this year will be better than the last. I can't remember the last thing that you said as you were leaving, but the days go by so fast, and it's one more day up in the canyon, and it's one more night in Hollywood. If you think that I could be forgiven, wish you would.